Now, 97.9 FM, WCHL Championship Sports, and Seagrove's Nationwide Insurance Agency present The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee.
Renner on the play action, looking deep. Going to go to Highsmith, leaping for the touchdown. What a grab!
Join us for the next hour of our pregame coverage as Art Chansky and internet legend Bob Lee of Bob Lee Says discuss Carolina football and all the hot topics concerning college football here in town, across the ACC, and across the country.
Still on his feet at the 30. Bernard is going to score. Oh, my goodness, what a run by Gio Bernard. The wide receiver going to throw it. The Tar Heels pick it off. Trey Boston.
The Good Sports is brought to you by the Seagrove's Nationwide Insurance Agency, your one-stop insurance destination right here in the southern part of heaven. Let the Seagrove's Insurance Agency take care of you. Seagrovesinsurance.com. Now, page two of 97.9 FM's exclusive Carolina football pregame coverage.
Heels with the lead. Another handoff to Bernard. He's into the secondary. Goodbye.
The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee.
Hello and welcome to The Good Sports. I'm Aaron Keck here at WCHL Studios in Chapel Hill. I'll be your host this afternoon, but we're just about 2 hours away from the Tar Heels taking on Miami, and we got a lot to get through between now and then. So right now I'm going to turn it over to the stars of the show, a pair of guys who've been in love with Carolina sports since before I was born, and I had a birthday yesterday, so that's a little bit longer ago now than it was before. Bob Lee of BobLeeSays.com. And Chapelboro.com's Art Chansky. Guys, we're heading into week 7 of the Tar Heels season. They're 4-2, riding a 3-game winning streak. And they just scored what may be the first signature win of the Larry Fedora era last week against Virginia Tech. Take a look back at that game and tell me, is this where you thought Carolina would be at this point of the season when it began?
Aaron, I'm just amazed that you were born on the same day as the University of North Carolina.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. Yep.
Oh, what was your question again?
talk a little bit more about me.
And is it destined that you are going to continue the Bill Friday legacy, who, as we know, died on University Day?
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I don't want to think that far ahead.
Well, you know, last week's game was an interesting game because coaches always say that you have to win at least two out of the three phases of football to win the game. And Carolina really got blown out in two of the phases, the special teams and the defense. But their offense was so good that they overcame those two. And I don't know if it was a signature win because Virginia Tech doesn't look like the Vitek of your usual, Bob Lee.
No, I agree. I mean, but, yeah, it has to be a signature win. I think so far at the halfway point in the season, and this, as we all know, this is the end of the season. 12 games is it for us this year. There is no Christmas in Shreveport. But I think we've had a signature season.
Thank goodness.
Yes. I think we've had a signature and a half game. That was last week against Virginia Tech and the second half against Louisville. I think the second half against Louisville continues to me to be the real beginning of the whole Larry Fedora is here and how is it different. That we have yet to – I mean, if you played Wake Forest again with Gio Bernard, I bet on us by two touchdowns minimum.
Yeah, you know, I think we're 6-0 at this point if Gio plays in those games against at Wake Forest and Louisville. But, you know, it's really interesting – I was reading the News and Disturber this morning, and
that's the nicest thing you've called him in weeks,
I
Chansky.
Know, you know, I don't know what his name is. It's what is it? Luke DeCock, Duke LeCock.
Careful. Watch the line.
I referred to him as Luke DeCrock after what I read this morning.
All right, that'll work.
He gives the mid-season report card and then goes on to say how the teams are going to finish, and he picks Carolina to lose the next three games, to lose today at Miami, to lose at Duke next week, and then, of course, to lose at NC State at home the following weekend. Conversely, he picks State to win the next three games. So, Bob Lee, you're like on the underground payroll over there in the
well,
News
yeah,
Observer. Tell me what's going on over there.
Well, the News Observer marketing plan, they've obviously figured that the Wolfpack have enough literate alumni that they would actually subscribe to the paper if they keep hyping them like this. The only thing I can figure.
Well, you know, interesting subject because the next 3 weeks, starting today, really will define Larry Fedora's first season. And They're three. I don't know if they're going to win all three, but they're three really winnable games. So to say that they're going to be 0-3, I don't know where Luke the Croc is coming from. Is that his name, Luke the Croc?
That's close enough. I don't know if that's whether his grandmother calls him that or not, but I think we can get by without that. With that, going back to Carolina, I thought last week, and you say, well, this isn't a classic Vic-led Beamer ball, Bud. What's his name? Defense, and it's not, but it's still Virginia Tech, and they're 3-3, and Duke is 5-1. Who says there is a God when you've got ACC football at the halfway point and what'll happen today up in Blacksburg? But it was still Virginia Tech, and they don't send out a team that you just roll over, and we beat them convincingly. And it counts a lot, and you can only play the games that you play and win the games you win. And I thought it was very impressive. I don't think there was anybody, including you and I, that expected us to win that game in the fashion that we did and score that many points against a Bud Foster defense. You just don't.
You know, I agree. And also the fact that we made so many mistakes in the kicking game. We made so many mistakes on defense, giving up over the top a couple of long bombs and a kickoff return for touchdown. But to me, the game turned around. If people talk about Travis Hughes' strip. To me, the game turned around on the first play of the second quarter when Fedora and Blake Anderson played a little trickery and decided to send the punt team back to the sideline, run out in the field, and instead of using the hard count, snap the ball, give it to Gio. And after Jack Tabb sealed the end, boom, he was gone. That play reminded me. You remember MASH at the end of the movie at the end of the football game where, you know, the coach from the other team, you know, recognized some guy. He recognized, you know, and I say this.
Aaron, did you know there was a MASH the movie?
I did know there was a MASH the movie. I went back and I saw all those really, really old classic movies.
Well, now, did Alda or Donald Sutherland play Hawkeye?
Shut up. I'm going to say this because it was the name of the guy in the movie, but the guy's name was Spearchucker Jones, who they brought in.
Hammer Williamson.
Right, exactly. And so when the guy ran by the coach, they said, what happened? And one of the guys said, our ringer spotted their ringer, you know. So when Bernard ran right past Frank Beamer in that play, that's what I was thinking of. Beamer's going like, what the hell's going on here? You know, the guy's, boom, 62 yards.
Well, I think the turning point in the game actually occurred a few minutes before that when the team ran out on the field in those incredibly wonderful all-white uniforms. And I wrote about that this week in Chapelboro. And I have to mention it again because I'm still just amazed. I thought the all-white uniform from head to toe, and I talked to a lot of former football lettermen, including Danny Talbert, who was one of the last really top UNC players to wear that same white helmet, just fell in love with it. And I immediately let Bubba know, and he noted that I am a big fan of the all-white uniform. I think white helmets with white jerseys, blue helmets with blue jerseys. I don't normally like getting tricky with uniforms, but Aaron, what do you think about those white uniforms?
I love the white uniforms. I'm not a big uniform person. I had a guy in grad school who's really into uniforms and went on and on about Oregon. Basically, yeah, that, and just lost the will to live when he saw Oregon's uniforms. I think it's the same team on the field.
I thought we looked faster. I thought Gio looked faster.
I think that's because Giovanni Bernard was carrying the ball 268 yards.
Yeah, I think so.
That had a little bit to do
Aaron,
with that.
And I do think that you're fairly ununiform myself. So.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
But I have heard no one say anything bad about it.
Well, Bob Lee, did you call Bubba and tell him what uniforms to wear today? Do you know what we're wearing today?
I haven't gotten that sort of influence yet, but I'm working on it.
Oh, my goodness.
But he did. When I emailed him right after the game, and he was probably still in beautiful Keenan Stadium amidst the lofty pines, and he emailed me right back on his iPhone and said, your approval is noted, and I'll let Larry know.
You are an iPhone legend.
I think that might have been his secretary's secretary's secretary that was emailing you back.
Ouch!
Hey, do you know that last week was the first time since 1984 that state...
1994
that state
feels
Duke
like 84
and Carolina played at home and all won. Now here's
the triangle trifecta.
Will it be 18 years before that happens again?
And the fact that you could have seen all three games because they were staggered. There was 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 8 o'clock.
And
I saw two of the three.
Yeah, you didn't go to the
I did
Duke
not
game.
Go to the wonderful Wally. No, I was not at the Wally.
Well,
it's skirting the question, though. Is it going to be 18 years before it happens again?
I think so. I think we're looking at something like Halley's Comet of triangle football.
Well, it is a It's a topsy-turvy year in ACC. We'll talk about the Miami game when we come back here on The Good Sports. And a couple of serious issues to talk about, too. Obviously, the death of Bill Friday leaves a big hole for Carolina, and there's still a chancellor search going on. So we'll talk about both of those when we come back here at WCHL Studios. You're listening to The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee.
Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the difference. At Duke Integrative Primary Care, our expert physicians, trained in the very best medicine has to offer, partner with you to combine conventional medicine and whole person care so you can live each day in the best possible health. To learn more or attend a free information session, visit DukeIntegrativeMedicine.org. Only minutes from Chapel Hill, open to all and now accepting insurance. Duke Integrative Primary Care, transforming your health and your life.
Listen up, Carolina fans. Go for the goal line this season into Fitch Lumber and Hardware. Don't fumble with the never-ending home projects. Whether you're an experienced contractor or a novice do-it-yourselfer, get your jobs done right the first time with the guidance of our knowledgeable staff with decades of experience passed down from generation to generation. So come see us in Carver at 309 North Greensboro Street or call us at 919-942-3153. Check us out online at FitchLumber.com. Go Heels!
Hi, I'm Scott Maitland, proprietor at Top of the Hill. As smooth as a Dre Bly interception and as sweet as a Carolina victory, Topo Vodka is the perfect complement to your Tar Heel tailgate and victory party. Handcrafted on Franklin Street from only local and organic wheat, Topo is truly the spirit of North Carolina. Ask for Topo Vodka in your local ABC store and find establishments everywhere. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and on the web at topodistillery.com. Drink local. Drink Topo Vodka. The spirit of North Carolina. Cheers.
There's no such thing as a free lunch. We've all heard this before, but how does it relate to your bank? Harrington Bank is one of the only banks in the Triangle who truly provides free checking. Our competitors say free, but they require you to maintain a hefty balance or limit your transactions. When Harrington Bank says free, we mean free. Free personal checking, free business checking, no lengthy requirements. Stop by one of our three convenient locations in Chapel Hill to learn more. Harrington Bank, you deserve banking like this.
Hello and welcome back to The Good Sports. I'm Aaron Keck here in WCHL Studios, joined by Art C. and Bob Lee, Art Chansky and Bob Lee of BobLeeSays.com. Guys, it's been, as we said, a wild year in the ACC. Duke is up, Virginia Tech, Miami are a little down. Size up the ACC at this point in the season. You've got Duke doing really well, Clemson doing well, Georgia and Virginia Tech not doing very well at all. It's been a very weird year in the ACC this year.
Well, you know, Florida State losing that game to NC State last week has been bandied about, and in Tallahassee and northern Florida, they have to be suicidal down there because they had a 16-point lead. They basically shut their offense down against a team that gave up 44 points to Miami the week before. And so not only did they lose the game and they jeopardized their Atlantic Coast, their Atlantic Division status, but they've also effectively, Bob Lee, taken ACC out of the national championship pick.
Yeah, they were.
We
were a one-trick pony in terms of the national picture, and of course we've got our BCS Bowl anyway. The winner of the conference, whoever it may be, will get the Orange Bowl. But I was at that game, the Florida State NC State game. I was sitting with some relatively normal adult Wolfpack fans of duration, those who go on a regular basis. I was seated obviously on the 50, being a celebrity, and knowing only celebrity well.
Yeah.
How
much did you pay for that ticket?
My company was what I paid.
Bubba Cunningham, secretary.
Exactly.
Hey, on the 50.
My salient point, gentlemen, is that at the half, 16-0, they were all happy. They say, well, we've held them to 16 points. This is a good game so far, but they're going to come out at the half and blow us away. So they were all happy at the half that they were behind only 16-0. Mm-hmm. And everybody, you know, whether you're a State fan or not, fully expected the TJ or EJ, whatever his name is, man, to come out and them to score 40 points in the first half and just name their score and went in and put in the fourth string, and it didn't turn out that way. So the State fans, they did stick around till the end. I will give them credit for that. And it was a barn burner right at the end with the whole thing coming down to the you know, did you expect T.A. McClendon to fumble the ball once again as they were down on the one-yard line? It was very reminiscent.
Well, coaches are, you know, really what – don't tell me what you did for me yesterday. And Jimbo Fisher took a huge step backwards. So everybody wants to bring Bobby back out of retirement. I mean, how can you lose that game when you're supposed to be a national championship contender? Well,
speaking of
Not the only coaches on the hot seat.
Other than whatever his name is at Boston College, who else do you
Spaziano.
See on the hot seat?
Spaziano.
I don't think we need to worry. They just got a new AD, and his first job is going to be go find us another football coach.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they were saying T.O.B. would have been on the hot seat if State had lost that game. But I also want to say that, you know, the two techs have been very disappointing to the point where neither of those coaches are going to be in trouble. But those teams are going to have very mediocre seasons.
Wait a minute. Now, I understand. Okay, Frank Beamer is an institution. There's no problem there. He will determine his own fate. You don't think Paul Johnson's on a hot seat?
No. No. Not now.
Share with us, Bro Chance.
Well, no. I mean, here's a guy.
He lost to a middle something.
Yeah, but here's a guy who's been to an ACC championship game and so forth. So I think.
Okay, but he's not very personable.
Right.
And he runs this odd, gimmicky offense. He doesn't have whatever his name is, Johnson, anymore at wide receiver. And he's got Georgia over there between the hedges in the top five every year.
Well, how do you define the hot seat? What I'm saying is they're going to have a mediocre season, so the pressure's going to be on him next season. But the hot seat means somebody who's about to lose his job.
Well, but wait a minute. He's already played the one card that a coach on the hot seat plays. He's gotten rid of a coordinator, which is another point, a mid-season coordinator axing this week with
Al Groh.
And
that saves his butt. For at least one more season.
But now, but when you do it in mid-season, do you cut yourself off of that extra season that they fire the coordinator
does? You fire the DC and then go 2-4 the rest of the way.
Well, that's why you do it. You make a move in the middle of the season to get yourself another year. But I don't think Paul Johnson is in trouble immediately, but I think I think they're unhappy.
All right, now let's move a little bit further north to College Park. How long will they deal with the Randy Edsall is not the second coming of Jim Tatum or whoever?
Well, Randy Edsall's only in the second season. And
Carl Torbush lasted how long?
He lasted three. They tried to fire him after two, but, you know, some of the cooler heads prevailed.
So those
we had cooler heads back then.
Not in this room necessarily.
I think Randy Edsall is safe for one more year. But you know, the whole idea that the ACC again is not a national championship contender is a global issue for the ACC. I mean, what can we do to get a team in the picture for the national title?
And that brings us to the next question. These teams are down. Who's up in the ACC? Who's been a positive surprise this year?
Well, of course, right now Clemson is still up. And I would have to say Carolina has the arrow pointing upward. And Duke certainly has the arrow pointing
upward. Duke, by the way, leading Virginia Tech 7-0 right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that game just started.
There's a juggernaut at the Wally.
Yes.
You know, Duke does not have what you would call a sure win by any stretch of the imagination over the next six games starting today.
Well, so, I have, you know, our later question, I'll go
that's
ahead
and Duke LaCroix said that they're going to get this six win, their bowl win against us.
Well, letting the cat out of the bag a little
Duke
bit.
LaCroix.
In our two-minute drill, one of my answers from the two-minute drill for the games to watch today is Duke-Virginia Tech. If Duke beats Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, I think that is a seismic event in the ACC. Little Johnny Swafford will just melt on that one.
Well, but if that happens, I do think that the commode gets a little warm for Frank Beamer. Even, you know, you a guy, Frank Beamer, who is untouchable. I mean, losing to Duke at home and make it your third straight loss?
So is Cutcliffe the coach of the year, or is it Fedora?
Oh, yeah, good for you that you brought up Fedora.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think Larry Fedora could be.
I learned from Jim Lehrer.
Wait a minute. Now, all this thing that we can't have, we can't do this. Can Larry Fedora, according to ACC rules, be coach of the year?
Why don't you get Bubba on the cell phone and ask him that question?
Or his secretary. Bubba can. No, really. They keep saying that.
Yes, he can. To next week's game at Wallace Wade Stadium is going to determine the coach of the year.
Think there'll be game day? We'll come to the Wally?
No. but we will be there.
We won't have Herbie and the crew at the Wally. Can you imagine that? Just wow. ESPN game day comes to the Wally in our lifetime.
Hey, the Wally is headed for a $30,000 renovation. They're going to lower the field.
They'll do it this week.
That is a $30 billion renovation.
They will do it this week to welcome game day to the Wally.
No, I think Cutcliffe.
I think we've lost it here, Aaron.
Cutcliffe and Fedora.
I'm feeling a little like Jim Lehrer right now, trying to corral you guys. So while you paused, Coach of the Year, either Cutcliffe or Fedora, depending on who wins next week. Who's the player of the year? Is it Gio for sure?
If he keeps getting 262
200 yards a game, I think.
If he keeps getting 260 yards a game, he will win player of the year.
Right. And can he be player of the year?
Sure.
Is that
sure.
a Johnny Swafford rule?
Get Bubba on the phone. Hey, look, we're not saying that the winner next week wins Coach of the Year, but between Cutcliffe and
Fedora. Has the edge.
Yeah, between those two, because if somebody has a run, anybody has a run for the rest of the season, mm-hmm. that coach is going to win. And there are still teams that can have a run. Even your boy, T.O.B., can have a run and finish 9-3, like Duke LaCroix says in the paper.
All right, we've got to move on fairly quickly, but a couple of serious issues that have hit Carolina, of course, yesterday, the loss of Bill Friday, 92 years old, on University Day, and prior to that, the beginning of the chancellor search. But we'll begin with Bill Friday, because that's obviously the more serious and salient point at UNC. Say a little bit about Bill Friday, what he's meant to this university.
I had never met the gentleman. I met him one time very casually at a reception, but I'm sure it wasn't memorable for him. But everybody, I know a number of people who have known him, particularly in the last 15 or 20 years. I've never heard a discouraging word.
Everyone
about
says
Bill
that.
Friday. No,
yeah.
I mean he had that ability, and maybe it had to do with the way that he looked like everybody's favorite uncle, and mm-hmm. a manner about him, his speech, of course, his TV show that introduced him to a different generation. How could you not like the man? Now, I think his death on University Day is akin to Thomas Jefferson and John Adams both dying on the 4th of mm-hmm. July. I mean, you got 365 days it could happen. Not only that, but he died on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, odds were 1 in 7 that Bill Friday would die on Friday. What day will Tuesday Well die? But I thought that was amazing, and I happened to be over here yesterday morning when it happened, which was, I mean, it was just, God bless him.
Well, all I can say is that I knew Bill Friday, I met Bill Friday, and Bill Friday was our Jack Kennedy.
I don't think you can say it any better.
Mm-hmm.
That was profound, Archie.
Yeah, exactly. If anybody's old enough to remember that line from the debate. But he was an incredible man, and I will give lots of credit to the News and Observer. Their coverage of his death this morning was phenomenal. The stories that they had, the range of stories. I spent an hour reading every word, and it just brought back such great memories, because Bill Friday, you know, went through the speaker ban, he went through the Dixie Classic, he went through the controversy of naming NC State UNC Raleigh. You know, at one point he wanted to name NC State UNC Raleigh, mm-hmm. and there was a huge backlash there, and, you know, it ended up being NC State University. But
does the name Herbert Aptheker mean anything to you, Chansky?
Herbert Aptheker.
He was the communist sympathizer who spoke outside the wall on Franklin Street. He was the whole embodiment of the speaker ban law. Hmm. And Herbert Aptheker. See what our listeners learn with this show.
That's
Aaron?
Amazing. Yeah.
Herbert Aptheker was
something
was a
new
noted
every other month.
Who was not allowed to speak on campus because of the legislation, and he moved outside the little stone wall there across from Silent Sam and spoke to 22 people
it's gonna
and 47
be,
media.
Well, it's going to be. Well, we've got to take a break. But
may the great Bill Friday rest in peace. And really condolences to Ida Friday and her family and everybody who loved Bill Friday, because he was, you know, the word beloved is often thrown around loosely, but he was.
In this case, it's an understatement.
He was beloved, no question.
We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we will talk to the new associate AD for compliance at UNC. Paul Pogge will be with us when we come back here on The Good Sports with Art C and Bob Lee.
I'm Edward Holmes, CEO of Cruisers Convenience Marketplace. We operate 21 locations in North Carolina and are headquartered right here in Chapel Hill. You may know us for our 79-cent fountain drink or sparkling, clean, and friendly stores, but we're just as proud of our community outreach. Earlier this year, we presented $20,000 to local schools and delivered refillable coffee mugs and gas cards to teachers and employees. At Cruisers, we believe being your locally owned convenience store means taking care of our customers, employees, and the people who make a difference in the community.
Cruisers. Good to go.
At Southern States Volkswagen of Durham, we're your one-stop shop to find the new Volkswagen or quality pre-owned vehicle you've been looking for. We've got over 200 new Volkswagens to choose from, including Beetles, Jettas, Rutans, and more. And if we don't have it, we'll be glad to find it for you. And with deals like ours, there's just one thing you ought to know. There's only one place you'll ever buy a car from again. Southern States Volkswagen of Durham. Get to Southern States Volkswagen of Durham today or visit us on the web at vwofdurham.com.
Shotgun snap, Renner play action to Blue. Deep over the middle, Tapley for six!
Art, in the mountain of occupational ambiguity, nothing ranks above provost. I've talked to five provosts. They don't even know what they do. Right underneath provost lies rear admiral and gunnery sergeant. And right below that lies compliance officer. At the end of the day today, we still won't know what the rear admiral or a provost does, but we're going to find out what a compliance officer does. Our special guest today is UNC Associate Athletic Director for Compliance, Paul Pogge. Paul, welcome, and what the heck do you do?
Well, thank you very much. Great to be here with you guys, and I think the compliance office is one that often gets those questions. What exactly is it that you guys do? And we look at it fairly broadly. We educate, first and foremost. I think it's really important that people understand that. The NCAA has rules that have been issued by the governing body that every institution is expected to abide by. And so education is a critical component of what we do. So that's the first one. We also monitor and audit, and we investigate on the back end and report things that we believe need to be reported to the NCAA. So there's ongoing communication with them when there needs to be. But the foremost piece of what we do is education and working with our student athletes, working with our coaches, working with our boosters and everyone else affiliated with the program to make sure that they understand what needs to happen to ensure that we maintain the institutional control that's necessary.
Okay, let's take this one at a time. Education. Everybody makes jokes about the NCAA manual. How big is it? And how long does it take a compliance officer like you to get through it and really know it to the point where you can educate people on it?
Well, the compliance manual, I guess, if you want to call it that, it's constantly being revised every year based on feedback that the NCAA gets. It is fairly lengthy, and there are a lot of different things that are covered in there, recruiting and benefits and practice hours and different categories of things to try to maintain that fair competition standard for everybody. In terms of learning it, I think it's an ongoing process is probably the most appropriate way to look at that because we're constantly expected to work with the ACC and work with the NCAA to make sure that we're up to speed on what exactly is in there.
When you talk about monitoring, how many people do you have working with you in a compliance capacity, and how does the monitoring actually work?
Well, monitoring is a broad term again, and I think it's important that people understand that we monitor things that are very mundane too, but we monitor a lot of different things, and it's not just the compliance office that fulfills the monitoring capacity. It's hopefully everybody that's affiliated with our program is helping us watch for the things that are indicative of institutional control, which we are tasked to maintain by the NCAA. So we expect our coaches to keep an active eye out for the players, and we work with them. We expect our players to help monitor themselves, basically. So it's an ongoing effort by a lot of people.
That's part of the education process. You make sure everybody's aware of what the rules are, and you expect everybody to sort of self-monitor their programs and themselves.
Well, they self-monitor, and it certainly funnels up to the compliance office, too, which oversees the monitoring component and puts the structure in place. Vince Zilli and I got here to Carolina about 2.5 months ago, and we're working on building that framework right now to make sure that we're structurally sound in the monitoring component to make sure that we have the pieces in place to fulfill our responsibilities.
Okay, you just brought up a key name and a key element of your being here. You mentioned Vince Ely, the other new guy who came with you to Team Bubba. Now, over the last 200 – correct me if I'm wrong here and perish the thought. But over the last 200 years, the University of North Carolina has developed a well-deserved reputation for incestuous inbreeding of its of its high-level administration staff, and to the point of xenophobia. You looked that up, Jansky. Xenophobia.
You said that. I didn't.
Okay.
I
mean, a lot of syllables
and you,
right there.
And you represent, you represent
the inbreeding is
xenophobia. Anyway, you guys represent a new breed of outsiders. Now, surely you've met John Montgomery, head of the Rams Club. John has been here. Wonderful guy. We love him. He has been here 10 years, and he's still referred to as that new guy. You've been here 2 months. Welcome to the world of you're not from around here, are you? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your background and why you are here, other than you love Bubba like we do.
Well, I went to undergrad and law school at the University of Notre Dame. I majored in finance and got a law degree from there. Took the bar exam in Colorado and held a variety of internships during my educational days with various pro teams, Colorado Rockies, Denver Nuggets, Colorado Avalanche. In law school, I got set up with the Arizona Cardinals and worked in an internship capacity basically with them in football operations. So I always thought I wanted to be a general manager of a pro team. And so that gave me a great chance to go learn from Rod Graves, who's the GM down there and one of my mentors. He's an outstanding person and have the utmost respect for Rod. But I realized that the professional lifestyle was not for me. I really believe in the value of higher education, and I think that college athletics plays a critical role in the development of student athletes who are hopefully being molded to become the next leaders of our society. And so I made the transition into college athletics and moved to the University of Denver from the Arizona Cardinals.
Were you at Notre Dame when Matt Daugherty was there?
I was after him.
I made a joke first time I met you that when you told me you were a law school graduate, I said, "Was it so bad here that we need an in-house counsel and all on the staff?" And then, you don't have to answer that. The other thing is, you didn't know Bubba very well. But tell us a story about how you met him and that it was kind of a quick relationship building to the point where you got here.
Well, I'd heard Bubba's name a lot in the industry after I transitioned in and was working at the University of Denver, even all the way out there in Colorado. I was aware of the impact that Bubba has on this industry. He's one of the most respected people across the entire country, and people think incredibly highly of him. And so I heard him speak at the NACTA conference in the middle of the summer when I was down there.
The what?
The NACTA is the acronym that's used. It's the National Association of Collegiate Directors of Athletics, and they have a big conference every summer that a few thousand people go to. And Bubba spoke there, and I heard him. I was aware that he was a Notre Dame grad as well and had worked there. And knowing the influence that he had in the industry and how successful he'd been, I went up and introduced myself and just kind of solicited some advice that he might have for somebody like me that was new in the industry. And so after that brief informal conversation, we maintained contact periodically. And obviously when he got the North Carolina job, we followed up and had further conversations about me coming out here.
Well, we'll get back to the intricacies of what you do in compliance and how that affects the university in just a moment. But when you mentioned Notre Dame, a couple of weeks ago when the announcement was made about Notre Dame joining the ACC, my first action was to email Bubba that now when we go up there every two or three years or whatnot to play, will he be in charge of picking the Friday night restaurant because he would know all the hot places to eat at South Bend, and he immediately wrote back, my favorite was the Cracker Barrel. Now, do you have any other restaurant recommendations, as Sansky said, Murphy's Irish Tavern or something other than Cracker Barrel in South Bend?
Nah, it's a great steakhouse in South Bend, right?
Yeah, and on a student budget, I didn't eat there much. But there are a couple good pizza restaurants. Rocco's Pizza is a personal favorite of mine.
We've got Rocco's Pizza and Cracker Barrel, folks. So all of you Indiana cuisine people can take it out on Paul and Bubba on this.
All right, we're going to bring this.
Game day is going to be there tomorrow.
Game day will be there. And
right underneath Touchdown Jesus.
Yeah, it's great what they're doing back there, but I'm a Tar Heel now and thrilled to be here. And I know Carolina's got a huge one today against Miami, so it's going to be fun to watch.
Well, we'll bring this interview back to some semblance of sanity when we get back. We're with Paul Pogge, the new compliance officer. What's your actually official title, Paul?
Associate Athletic Director.
Associate Athletic Director for compliance?
It's just my title is just Associate AD.
We'll be back with Bob Lee and Paul Pogge right after these messages.
uniquely qualified to cover Carolina. 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carrboro's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
Hi, I'm Scott Maitland, proprietor of Top of the Hill. Top of the Hill helped forge the North Carolina microbrewing renaissance, and we are now proud to lead the state in micro distilling. Our organic Topo Vodka is handcrafted from scratch in our Franklin Street distillery using only local organic soft red winter wheat. Ask for it in your local ABC store and find establishments everywhere. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, or the web, topodistillery.com. Drink local, drink Topo Vodka, the spirit of North Carolina. Cheers!
Are you a weekend warrior? Along with the fun of being active comes the risk of injury. This is Dr. Harry Stafford, Director of the Primary Care Sports Medicine here at UNC, as well as a UNC team physician. And for those times when your knee gets injured, your Achilles is hurt, your back goes out, or if you've got a shoulder injury, UNC Family Medicine is a great choice for fast and easy treatments. I invite you to find out more on our website, uncfamilymedicine.org.
UNC Family Medicine. Being here for weekend warriors is just one part of caring for the course of your life.
This is Kit Ballou of Franklin Street Realty.
And I'm Sammy Martin, and we're still here. The last few years have been, shall we say, a challenge, but honestly, this year has been a turnaround, not just for us, but for the real estate market in general. Don't get me wrong, this is still a tough environment for housing.
It is, but our agents really know what they're doing. They have the resources they need, they persevere, and they're not afraid to tell you the truth. Our reputation for having a long-term perspective and a dogged commitment to getting the job done keeps us ranked among the top 20 firms in the Triangle.
And among the very top in Chapel Hill. We often tell you what to do, how we do it, and why you should call us if you need a realtor. We want to introduce you to the rest of Franklin Street Realty, who you'll be hearing from in the coming months.
Go to franklinstreetrealty.com, look for houses, and check out our agents. You'll find former restaurateurs, teachers, counselors, tennis players, even a midwife. You might be surprised at who we are or were.
Franklin Street Realty at 929-7174. Why would you call anyone else?
Two receivers near side, one to the far. Randall Dunn, tight end as a wing. Scales the tailback to Lamas, to Thomas's right. Shotgun snap, Thomas in trouble, down he goes! Carolina football with a 14-point lead.
We're back with Paul Pogge talking about compliance officering. We've got two different eras of coaches here among our two revenue sports. We've got the young and upcoming Larry Fedora, who grew up in the era of the internet and tweeting and whatnot. And then you've got Roy Williams, who, let's just say, didn't grow up in a high-tech environment and is more of a throwback to the Dean Smith era. In your role dealing with those two gentlemen and how they approach their job and their profession, how do you balance the two of them with how they view what you do that they didn't, Roy didn't grow up having you?
Well, I think it's important to realize that regardless of people's backgrounds, the rules have evolved and they apply to everybody. And I think our coaches understand that and respect that. And so the application is fairly consistent across the board, regardless of what the person looks like that's actually applying the rules or helping us enforce the rules. So whether it's Larry Fedora or Roy Williams or Mike Fox with baseball or Brian Calvis with women's tennis, they all look exactly the same in a lot of ways when we're talking about following the NCAA rules. There are restrictions on practice times and what you can do with recruits, as I said, and we expect our coaches to follow those guidelines to a T.
We mentioned with Roy particularly his well-known and often joked about lack of computer knowledge and proficiency. And yet social media and the use of Facebook and Twitter is a big deal now with college athletes and how they can get in trouble doing it. Of course, it was sort of at the crux of the issues going on at Carolina now with Marvin Austin a couple of years ago. Who on your staff, maybe yourself, is the expert on social media and trying to help our athletes and I guess our coaches avoid pitfalls in social media?
Well, we take a very proactive approach with social media, and we work with our student athletes to make sure that they understand that what they're putting out there on social media at any time, even if your settings are private, that's 1 minute from going viral worldwide. And so when you put something into that forum, you need to understand it's not a text message, it's not an email sent from one person to another. You're putting it into the public domain, and so you need to be cognizant of the ramifications that can occur there, whether those be a reflection on your team, on your family, or on yourself, and potentially down the road having some negative impacts when you go to apply for jobs or represent yourself in other ways.
Now, you, as a representative of the athletic department, the old athletic department, you're not assigned to a sport, I don't assume.
I work with women's tennis. I'm one of two people who oversees women's tennis.
Okay, well, let's look from Vince's standpoint and from Bubba's standpoint, too.
That's so we can get to hit late in the afternoon.
Exactly. What is Carolina's policy, or is it an individual coach's policy on players tweeting?
Well, social media, we have a department-wide policy that we don't certainly ban department-wide the use of social media or anything like that. We understand that students use social media as a way to express themselves oftentimes and a way to communicate. And so we try to work with them, again, in the educational side to make sure that they're aware of proper usage of that and what the repercussions can be when you put something out there that may not be viewed as appropriate by some people. So that's our department-wide policy.
Do they bristle and say, well, that's none of your business what I do and who I talk to and how I do it? And is there either, I don't mean anyone specifically, but has there been a backlash from students about trying to manage their lives too much?
There really hasn't been. I think they actually appreciate the efforts, knowing that we always have our student athletes' best interests in mind. We're here to support our student athletes and coaches. Our mission as an athletic department is that we educate and inspire through athletics. And a key component of that is working with our student athletes to educate them on key things that are part of their lives, like social media. And so we educate them on the front end, and hopefully that does have an impact on how they use it and make them think twice before they hit post or send or something on social media, with the understanding that it reflects on their team, their family, and themselves.
Well, we have between 700 and 800 student athletes here.
Right.
Yeah. When you talk about monitoring, is there somebody who becomes a follower of every single athlete? So somebody theoretically sees every tweet and everything that's sent out from an athlete?
I think it probably is appropriate to talk about our monitoring policy specifically with social media. Glad you asked the question. We have a third-party company called Varsity Monitor, which monitors for us. And so we've engaged them. And how that works is student athletes register their Twitter and Facebook accounts when they come in at the beginning of every year. And this monitoring service basically helps us identify issues that could be problematic. And then what we do as a compliance office is work with the student athletes and educate them on what they're putting out there. But it helps us fulfill that monitoring component that the NCAA has basically intimated that every university needs to be doing.
Now, I'm going to guess. I'm just going to take a wild shot. I'm going to guess that this started when Bubba Cunningham came here, right?
I don't know exactly when Varsity Monitor started. I think it might predate Bubba, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that we're doing it now.
Okay.
We've been doing it for the 2.5 months that I've been here.
So when you very delicate, Chansky.
It just doesn't sound like
the velvet glove of Art Chansky.
It doesn't sound like something that existed here before. But there got to be some things that with how viral and how fast all this is moving that the NCAA decides, well, we just can't control that, like the recent ruling that texting and cell phoning from coaches is now unlimited. They used to try and control that, but they found that they couldn't. Is that an example of something that that they said, well, we just can't control it, so we're just going to let it happen whenever they want to do it?
I think it'd be inappropriate for me to speak on behalf of the NCAA, certainly.
But I
suspect that they
go ahead.
they do have some sharp people working at the NCAA. We have a lot of respect for them, and obviously are committed to being a good member institution. And their folks at the NCAA, I'm sure, look at the feasibility of different things. But at the forefront of everything that we do, everybody in this industry involved with collegiate athletics, I think, is trying to advance the best interests of the student athlete at its heart. And so I have confidence that they're pursuing that course of action.
Paul Pogge, we want to thank you so much for taking your time to join us today before we get ready to kick it off against Miami.
I got a quick question before we go.
No, but I got one before you got one.
All right, you get yours, and I'll get the final.
I'll do it, and then you'll get the last one.
Who is the Joe Biden character in this one now?
Shut up. You always get the last word anyway. A little birdie told me that one of the things that we want to do at Carolina is either rewrite or create a definitive policy manual for the athletic department. So there's no question about what our policies are and how they should be followed. And you're going to be heading up that. Is that true?
Well, a large part of what Bubba's asked me to do is, and I think this is a reflection on just how good he is and the innovative approach he takes. He's asked me to go out and specifically look at threats that exist to not just the Carolina Athletic Department, but anytime our athletic department has interactions with the rest of the university, and gather the facts there and figure out how we can best address any risks that are out there. So it's a fairly comprehensive risk management project. And in terms of timeline, I don't think there is a definitive endpoint for that. I think it's appropriate that be an ongoing conversation. So yes, a large part of my job is to figure out what risks are out there and how we can position everyone in the athletic department to best minimize those risks.
And that would be through a written manual at some point?
Well, at some point, yeah. I think we're constantly looking at our policies to try to figure out how we can refine those to make sure that our operations are both efficient and minimizing risk wherever we can. And so we're in the process of looking at existing policies right now. Obviously, you need a lot of information before you regenerate a policy or refine it. And so we're in the process of collecting that information right now. And I imagine over the coming years, we'll continue to refine those policies as need be and take a critical look at how we can do things better.
Okay, Bob Lee, I am done with this handsome young man who is the associate athletic director dealing with compliance at UNC, who, by the way, is single. I know he doesn't have time to.
But neither of us are.
I know that. But so I just want
to. Right. I've got to make sure
that any young ladies out there listening understands that we have a new dude in town who's saying
we play a team from about 8 miles away, Trinity University, a.k.a. Duke. And then following that, we play a technical agricultural school 28 miles away called NC State. Paul, do you really understand the importance of those two games?
I'm learning more and more about that each day.
Learn it real quick. Paul, they matter.
You know, Larry Fedora is outstanding, and I think it bears mention just the great job he's done with this team. He's working on changing the culture, and Larry's priorities are in the right place, and take that as no comment whatsoever on anything that predates him. But
Larry, we take care of that ourselves. You don't need to say anything. Art and I handle that part of it, Paul.
Larry has priorities on the well-being of the student-athletes and understands the importance of going to class consistently and really developing in every possible way that they can while they're here at Carolina. And so it's refreshing to have a coach who's got such great energy, such passion that's channeled in the right places, but also that's winning on the field and putting a fun product out there to watch. He's done a great job so far.
So you and Larry do understand that beating Duke and beating NC State matters.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Just like beating everybody matters.
Go Heels.
All right. Well, Paul, thanks so much. And you are part of the new breed here at Carolina that is represented by Bubba Cunningham's hire and has given a lot of us that love Carolina and has followed the athletic department dearly and has suffered through a lot over the last 15 years. Great hope for the future. And I hope you'll come back and visit with us again. This has been very informative and educational, and go get your seat for the game.
Happy to do it. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care.
AT&T asks, are you that guy? That guy who not only paints his face to cheer on his team, but then paints his entire torso? Well, you don't have to be that guy to prove your fanhood. Switch to AT&T and follow your favorite team like never before. It's much better than perusing the hardware store for this season's color palette of belly paints. You have the speed to get scores, stats, and highlights fast with AT&T. Rethink possible.
Visit att.com or store for details. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the difference. At Duke Integrative Medicine, we combine the best of all of medicine, from expert physician care to acupuncture, nutrition, massage, and more. In our state-of-the-art facility, we partner with you so you can live every day of your life in your very best possible health. To learn more or attend a free information session, visit DukeIntegrativeMedicine.org. Minutes from Chapel Hill, open to all, and now accepting insurance. Duke Integrative Medicine, transforming your health and your life.
Welcome back to The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee. We are near the end of the first quarter in Blacksburg, where, speaking of not fearing the Reaper, the Duke Blue Devils are leading Virginia Tech 20-7 right now. And that was that's a comeback on the part of the Hokies. Duke was up 20-0. Art C. and Bob Lee, what do you make of this? Duke's good.
It's in Revelations. I think chapter 4 or 5. That is a sign of the apocalypse.
Yes.
Well, this would be the third.
Don't buy green bananas, folks. The world is about to end.
This would, it's only the first quarter, guys, first of all. And it would be the third straight loss.
So they could get 60 before it's over. But the Blue Devils could
hang up 60. Is there a bowl game on December 21st, 2012 that Duke could actually make it to? Because that would be...
Wow. And they'll have to charter at least one bus to take all their fans to it, too.
Look. They're going to win the game, and they're going to get bowl eligible, and then we're going to go in there and whip their butts next week. I'm telling you, that's how it's going to happen.
All right. Well,
along with ESPN Game Day.
Along with ESPN Game Day, yeah. You just want to sit down at the table with all those guys.
It's ESPN.
Even without Aaron Andrews with the new whoever the girl is now.
It's ESPN 3 Game Day next week. That's what it's going to be.
You the trace,
three, whatever.
All right, well,
Hispaniola game day, whatever.
We got to go back. We got about 12 minutes left, but I want to go back to something we said we were going to talk about and didn't get to, the search for the next UNC chancellor. This is ongoing. Obviously, it's not going to be decided for some time, but a couple of names are sort of floating to the top of the rumor mill as far as who might be on the list for the next chancellor.
So what do you think? Is this the Condoleezza Rice list?
Yes. For you, Bob, yes.
No, the name that I've heard most prevalently is Tony Waldrop, who, of course, was a great track star here and was a vice chancellor here under Michael Hooker, I believe, and is now the chancellor at Central Florida. So, Tony.
Is he the chancellor or provost here?
I think he.
You didn't know what a provost does.
No, I'm just wondering.
That's right. Well, anyway, to me, he would be a great choice because he has experience. He also has familiarity with Carolina, which, despite what happened with Holden Thorpe, that had nothing to do with, you know, with his ties to Carolina in the back. I believe that we need a chancellor who understands Chapel Hill and understands Carolina.
And he's an athlete. How will that go well? He is most famous for being an athlete.
Yeah, but also he's distinguished himself a lot more than being an athlete since then. I think James Mazur. It took him. He didn't get it. You know, it took him a few years to figure out the town and gown relationship, and whatever he did well as a chancellor, he was an awful athletic chancellor because he presided over some of the worst decisions we've ever made here in athletics. Matt Daugherty, the Beamer Bunning fiasco, and the Butch Davis debacle. So, we need somebody who knows what's going on.
Art Chansky made it 50 minutes before saying the phrase Butch Davis debacle. Well done. That's a record for you.
Butch cool. Davis debacle. I like the sound of that.
Well, we did. We did
in the interview, you sliced Bedouin to ribbons in the interview with Paul. We touched all of our favorites today, Chansky.
I never mentioned Dick Bedouin's name. What are you talking about?
So the chancellor search is going to go on for months. Obviously, there are going to be names floated.
You mentioned two names.
Yeah.
And I threw in Condi as the third, and Dan Quayle as the fourth. But who is beyond Tony Waldrop?
Well, this is my question. Is this a situation where Carolina has a history of pulling people from within the Carolina family?
I think we will go outside the family.
That's my question.
I think we will go outside the family. Now, the other question is, do you go outside of academia and bring in a Jack Welch evil corporate guy? How does that scare you, my friend?
I think there would be certain committees and commissions.
All right. Okay. All right. Now, how about
they would be very upset by that.
You're on the line. Do not.
I'm on the line. Okay. Well, how about an Erskine Bowles type? You liked him. Everybody liked him as president. I did, and he had no academic credentials.
Historically,
he was a corporate guy.
Let's just end it with this point. Historically, one of the problems we've had in getting our first and second and third choices is the money. We've tried to get chancellors from highly regarded chancellors from other universities, and we couldn't pay them the money. Now,
right now is a candidate's market. We know there are like 8 or 10 top schools, both private and public, Florida, Georgia, Yale, Berkeley, that are in the search too. So I think you're looking at minimum of $1 million to get anybody now.
Yeah. Unless you cough up the other 400,000.
I think people have already done the math. It's Carolina right now. Take out Roy Williams and Larry Fedora. Among administrators, Bubba outdraws Holden right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's significant right now to the people who, to the Bill Friday School of what is valued most at our university, that our athletic director makes more than our chancellor.
All right, we got to move on to the two-minute drill. Before we do, Art Shansky, you want to plug the Chapel Burrows UNC's Greatest Football Star contest?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the greatest, the bracket for the greatest Carolina football star, we were at the Elite Eight last week, and now you had to make your Elite Eight picks to get down to the Final Four. So,
chapelburrow.com.
And chapelburrow.com. And the first offensive quadrant.
Can you say that one more time? Chapelburrow.com.
Quadrant, which means for Bob Lee, you know, for all you people who don't understand synonyms like that. Anyway, the first quadrant in offense was Charlie Justice, the first seed, versus Amos Lawrence, the second seed. Now, I don't know who you picked, but I know I picked Choo-Choo.
We go with Choo-Choo.
Okay. In the second offensive quadrant, the first seed was Don McCauley. The second seed was Kelvin Bryant.
I got to go with my buddy, number 23 from Garden City,
Long Island. I went with Don McCauley.
We kind of knew. We saw this coming several weeks ago.
Get on the website and vote. So you can, if you like Amos Lawrence and Kelvin Bryant, you can vote.
I know my wife will be voting for Donnie Mack.
All right. First defensive quadrant. First seed was LT. Second seed was Dre Bly. And, well, I went with LT against my better judgment, but I went with him anyway. And the second defensive quadrant was Julius Peppers, number one seed, versus William Fuller, the number two seed. It's amazing how if the NCAA tournament went like this, we'd have some great Elite Eight games, always one and two. But I went with Julius Peppers against William Fuller. So get on the bracket and pick to get to your Final Four.
All right. Time for the two-minute drill. So get ready. We got a bunch of questions. We'll begin with, we already mentioned Duke up 20-7 on Virginia Tech. By the way, Oklahoma's up 20-2 on Texas, in case you're following that game. Michigan State's leading Iowa, which I care about because I'm from Michigan. What are two other games to watch today?
Well, actually, those are the two I had, but I've got to pick something else. Yeah. I mean, I thought Duke Virginia Tech was important to see if Duke's, quote, for real and how bad Virginia Tech is. I'm going to go another one. I'm going to go with the old ball coach who's playing tonight in the other Death Valley, which he refuses to recognize the one in Clemson. So Steve Spurrier taking the fighting Gamecocks, the fighting chickens, into LSU.
It's going to be huge.
And, he'll get a rousing reception down there.
That's South Carolina.
That's a legitimacy game.
South Carolina versus LSU. Mm-hmm. And again, I thought Texas-Oklahoma was important because it's not important.
Right. And you're like the guy who sat next to me in class was always reading off my paper, right? Was that a violation? Because I had South Carolina at LSU as one of my games. The other game
Great minds, Chansky, great minds.
Also yours.
The other game I had.
Anthony has a question.
No,
Anthony has a question.
Anthony's telling us we got 5 minutes, so we'll move on.
The other game I had was Notre Dame and Stanford to prove whether Notre Dame is legitimate. They say that if Notre Dame can beat Stanford tonight, they'll be 1, 2, or 3 in the polls next week.
That's true. So speaking of, we're talking about teams. You're talking about Duke being bowl eligible. A number of teams not bowl eligible. Carolina, one of them this year. But a number of those teams are doing quite well this year. Talking about the teams that are not eligible to move on to the bowls.
Well, the Bowl Ban League, you know, which we think the winner should go to the Bowl Ban Bowl, the first two,
I love alliteration.
The standings in the Bowl Ban League are Ohio State 6-0, and if you look at their schedule, they're 12-0 easy. UNC is 4-2, Penn State is 4-2,
surprisingly,
and Central Florida is 3-2. So in the Bowl Ban standings, Ohio State is two games ahead.
I think Penn State is one of the real exciting things. I mean, the Penn State football team and their coach, you know, take them away from the whole pedophilia thing. But I think they've done remarkable after losing off. And people were saying they were going to go 0-12 after their first two, and they've come back. They beat Northwestern. I'd say a big kudos in Happy Valley for Coach O'Brien. He could be a National Coach of the Year.
Moving away from football, I don't know if you got to see the end of the St. Louis-Washington game.
Holy cow!
I did. Four runs in the ninth inning. They were down to their final out
final strike. I'm not sure, but you've got Detroit, you've got the Yankees, you've got St. Louis, and the Giants left in Major League Baseball playoffs. Who is going to the World Series? Obviously, Detroit.
Obviously.
Because there's only one team that can beat the Yankees in the playoffs, and they cannot lose to the Yankees in the playoffs, right. 06 and 2010.
And Justin Verlander is going to pitch all five games.
Of course.
Right.
And I happen to love the birds on the bat, so I always go with my Cardinals, and I'm going to say Cardinals versus Yankees. And the nobody knows who the Cardinal manager is. It's the not Tony La Russa manager,
yes.
And I'm
Mike
picking the
Matheny,
birds on the bat.
I know who he is.
Yeah. He's younger than my daughter.
You're extremely old, though, Bob Lee, is the thing. All right. And today's attendance in Miami, over or under 40,000?
I think there'll be 40,000 empty seats in Sun Life Landshark Roby Stadium, and the other 20,000 will be assorted drug mules and supermodels from South Beach. So I'd say about 20,000 ecstatic Hurricane fans will go home sad and dejected.
I want the over-under on 40 points if the winner's going to score 40 points. Over or under?
Over 40 points.
All right, I got that as well.
What are the keys to victory for Carolina?
Well, to me, you know, Stephen Morris and Philip Dorsett are the great passing combination that they have at Miami. They really rung it up against NC State. And so I think that if Carolina's defense can not give up the big play and the offense can avoid making big mistakes and Carolina can get ahead, they'll win the game by 10 points.
I'm looking for Gio's homecoming into Sun Life Stadium and watching Bernard hang up another 200.
Next question, perfect segue. Who is going to be the non-Giovanni Bernard star for Carolina today?
A.J. Blue.
Little Barth.
All right. And finally, final score. Little Barth, really. A lot of field goals.
Barth the junior.
Yeah.
I say I got 41-31 Carolina.
I'll go 45-38 Carolina.
With Barth getting 15 field goals.
With
right?
Barth getting 15 all field goals.
Right. Well,
go Barth, go.
All right. That is your predicted final score. It is almost 1:30, so we're going to wrap things up here at WCHL Studios and send it down to, what did you call it, Landshark Roby Stadium, where the Tar Heels are an hour away
they
from kickoff
their name
against
with
the Miami Hurricanes. I know. They do that on every single stadium. I go to Detroit. We play in Comerica Park. It's a horrible name. But this is Aaron Keck with Bob Lee and Art Chansky. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to send it down to Jones Angel and the gang in Miami right now. Good night.